I don't know if you can feel it, but for many Americans, the season of heavy eating is upon us. Thanksgiving, Christmas, Hanukkah. I can already feel the winter holidays straining at my belt loops. And big holiday meals have long been a tradition. But the actual foods on the table have changed a lot over the years. Instead of pies and potatoes, early colonial plates were filled with things like venison, eels, squash. And one other thing, a custardy fruit native to North America, which was eaten by indigenous peoples and colonialist settlers alike. It was this fruit that Dan Pashman was searching for in the woods.
I was in an undisclosed location in the New York metro area. Can't tell you more than that, Dylan. I'm sworn to secrecy.
This already sounds like I'm like nervous for you, actually, right out of the gate here. Dan Pashman hosts the food podcast, The Sporkful. And for more than a decade, he's been telling surprising, unusual food stories. Today, he is going to lead us on an adventure involving unexpected revelations, little-known history, and a secret meeting in the woods. It will be a true Atlas Obscura-style food adventure. It's the search for the wild pawpaw and the story of North America's most enigmatic fruit. After this.
When was the last time I took a road trip? How many national parks could I hit in 2 weeks? What about hotels? Wait, hey, Erica, how much am I spending on travel?
When your questions about life turn into questions about money, there's Erica, the virtual financial assistant to help you spend, save, and plan smarter. Only from Bank of America. What would you like the power to do? Erica is only available in the English language. You must download the latest version of the mobile banking app, only available on select mobile devices. Your chat may be recorded and monitored for quality assurance. Message and data rates and additional terms may apply. Bank of America N.A., member FDIC.
For your next vacation spot, check out Texas for their vast landscape of culture, regions, destinations, and activities. Explore 350 miles of coastline and every kind of hiking trail, from strenuous to wheelchair accessible. Enjoy world-famous barbecue and Tex-Mex, and check out thrilling cowboy experiences. Travel Texas even offers an online trip builder that allows users to generate a custom, visually led trip matched to their unique interests. Visit traveltexas.com/get-your-own to get the only trip to Texas that matters. Yours. So how did pawpaws become a part of your world? It sounds like you've become recently aware of this native North American sort of tropical-looking, tasting fruit. How did they enter your awareness?
We got an email to The Sporkful from a listener named Sarah Burr in Ohio. And she just said, I'm a chef. I wrote a cookbook. And I'm she described herself as a pawpaw nerd. Mm. She said, what if I came from Ohio to New York to take you foraging for pawpaws? And I was like, yes, please.
Yeah.
You know, like why, like with a pawpaw nerd, no less. I was told to show up at this park, basically on the side of a road. And as I would soon discover that, like, you hear the word park, you may think like playground and grass, but it was really more like woods, undeveloped woods. And we went for a walk in the woods. There's no real trail, so we're like climbing over branches, and you know, I don't know what we're looking for. I've never seen a pawpaw tree. Sarah is my guide.
Here is a poison ivy vine. I'm not going to put my foot up on there.
And she explained to me that she finds a lot of solace just sort of like in wandering in the woods. This is kind of like her happy place.
When I see familiar plants when I'm in a place like this, though, it just gives me a sense of comfort.
And so I was, you know, trying to brace that too and out for a wander. And then all of a sudden, she's just like, huh? Look! What? Did you find one? And we spotted our first pawpaw tree.
This is a baby one. Oh, hello, hello. Here's just a little tiny young one. Look at its beautiful leaves.
So it didn't have any fruit on it. It was maybe 1 or 2 feet tall. But still, it was like, okay, signs of life. Like, this is promising, you know. Sarah, I was coming from Ohio. She had not looked for pawpaws in these woods before. But she, like, on the, I guess the forums, the Pawpaw chat rooms.
Sure.
The secret Facebook groups.
Dark web. Pawpaw dark web.
She had scouted out the location, but we didn't have confirmation that we were in the right place or that this would be it. We didn't know what we would find. Would there be pawpaws there? And if there were pawpaw trees, would they have fruit? So we see this baby. That's a positive sign. But no fruit because it's a baby. So we keep walking deeper into the woods. And we're walking, walking. We kind of knew what to look for because one thing that she had explained and that I had read in my research is part of the reason why pawpaws are hard to cultivate is that they're also fussy about the way that they grow. So when they're very small, they like shade. But then when they get bigger, they want sun. And obviously the tree can't move. So its surroundings have to change over the years in just the right way.
Hmm.
That's tricky in nature.
Yeah.
So if you're going to find a big pawpaw tree, you kind of want to find like a clearing in the woods. Because it needs to be an open enough area where there's sunlight coming in that would have caught a baby pawpaw that started in the shade and helped it grow to adulthood. And so we're looking down the way and I see some rays of sunlight coming through, dappling the forest floor. And we're looking, we start walking towards that way. And then, and now I, because I'd seen one, I recognized the leaves. I said, that's a pawpaw. Is
yes!
that one? Yes.
Okay.
But it still looks too small.
So we start going towards it, and now we find a bigger pawpaw. And within a couple minutes, we found another one. Now we're in the patch.
Yes.
That one over there looks a little, that looks bigger.
Yes.
What, is that a pawpaw?
That should be a pawpaw, yes.
So all in all, we found, I would say, three or four pawpaw trees in a close proximity, the biggest of which were several times my height. As big as a two-story house.
Yeah.
You know, not redwoods, but legit trees.
Well, I assume you found a bunch of big, beautiful pawpaw fruits that you plucked gently from the trees and ate with delight.
No.
Okay. It seems like for a long time, people loved pawpaws. Like, indigenous people ate them. Early colonialists ate them. I read that George Washington actually grew them. So, like, why don't we eat them now?
The fruits that we're accustomed to buying in the supermarket have been cultivated and industrialized, in part for uniformity.
Yeah.
The pawpaw has not been industrialized. It has not been tamed. And so there can be a wide variation from one tree to the next, and also a wide variation depending on how many days since it came off the tree. Part of the reason why pawpaws have not been industrialized is that they're very fickle and they rot quickly after being picked. So they're not, they don't stay good for very long, so they're not great for being shipped all over the place to supermarkets. Especially when you're talking about trees. I mean, you need a pawpaw tree to be several years old before it will even start to bear fruit.
Yeah.
So the process of breeding pawpaws to get to the point where you had pawpaw trees that were easier to grow and that would bear fruit that would stay good for longer off the vine or off the branch and be able to be transported. Like, you're talking about at least a 10 and probably at least a 20-year project.
Yeah.
With an uncertain result.
I'm sorry to hear that you didn't find any pawpaws in the wild, but it sounds like your guide, Sarah, actually brought some along for you to try. What did they taste like when you first tried them?
First thing you notice is the texture. It's soft, almost custardy, like a very ripe mango. There's a little bit of a stringy flesh to it, but you can literally just sort of pull it apart with your fingertips, and it kind of mushes together in your hand.
Hmm.
You press on the skin, and it just pulls apart, and you get to this flesh on the inside. Hmm. And then it tastes citrusy. It had like a very slight sort of earthy funk to it. It was delicious. But also sort of like there's a lot of cognitive dissonance when you're eating it. Like, you know, Dylan, you ever like you're at a party and you're drinking and everyone has the same color, like plastic cup, and you put your drink down.
Sure.
And then you go to pick up a drink yeah. and thinking that it's your drink and you take a sip and it wasn't your drink.
Yeah. Yeah.
And you're like, wait, what did I just taste? You were drinking a beer and you pick it up and it's like Sprite.
Yeah.
And your brain gets so confused because you're like, that wasn't beer, but what was it? Because you didn't expect so it just shows you that like expectations are a big part of the taste experience. So the pawpaw is so incongruous because everything tells you it should be tropical, but you're like in the woods in the New York metro area or Ohio or one of the Carolinas, and you're like, what? What is this doing here? And so I found it also very hard to wrap my brain around it.
I have to say, it feels like pawpaws are making a comeback in a big way. Like, I've heard that a lot of people are growing them in their backyards. I know there's a program at Kentucky State University where they grow them. And even the fact that we are talking about them, it seems like maybe they are coming back into style.
So I think that pawpaws are definitely due for a moment. I think the moment is coming. In fact, it may be here.
Yeah, I wonder, you know, these sort of hyper-local movements and I think more awareness of kind of what is native and that kind of thing. I mean, I don't know. I wonder if there's some good that comes into the world overall when people, like, care about pawpaws and are like, oh, you know?
Well, it connects you to the place where you live.
Yeah.
It gives you a deeper connection to the place where you live to be made to think about, like, oh, this plant is from here and it belongs here and it's been here for hundreds of years, and by growing it and eating its fruit, you know, and enjoying it, you're connecting to something. You're connecting to other people who have lived on the same land and shared that space.
Yeah.
And you're having a shared experience, you know, and so that is cool. And certainly, like, that walk in the woods with Sarah, it's just sort of like a nice couple of hours walking in the woods, getting lost in the woods and wandering. And so it just connects you to nature and connects you to the place where you live in a way that you're not going to feel if you walk into the grocery store and buy some fruit.
That connection to getting all the way back to this idea of something growing in the wild is like a really kind of, that's a pretty profound idea.
We as people move around so much more than we did generations ago.
Yeah,
it's more common for any one of us to maybe have lived in different parts of the country over the course of our lives, or to at least have traveled around more readily. And I just think that you can kind of become a little disconnected from the place where you are, because also things sort of start to all seem the same. Mm. Like when I travel to a place, people hear that I host a food podcast, and they always want to be like, "Oh, well, this is our hot new restaurant in this city." And it's always some place that's sort of like doing what looks to me like the same kinds of things that restaurants are doing in New York. And I'm like, well, I don't want that. Show me the thing that I can't get anywhere else.
Yeah.
That's why you travel. That's why you go places, is to experience things that you can't experience where you live. And so to connect with pawpaws is to connect with a thing that can only exist in this place and makes the place feel special. And that's exciting.
Special thanks to Dan Pashman for speaking with me today and for sharing his journey to find the pawpaw. If you want to hear more of his and Sarah's adventure, check out his podcast, The Sporkful. It's really, really great. Our podcast is a co-production of Atlas Obscura and Witness Docs. The production team includes
Doug Baldinger,
Camille Stanley,
Chris Naka,
Sarah Wyman,
Manolo Morales,
Willis Ryder Arnold,
Tracy Samuelson,
John Delore,
Guinevere Govea,
McKenna Smith.
Our technical director is
Casey Holford.
Our theme and end credit music is by Sam Tyndall. This episode was mixed by
Luce Fleming.
And I'm Dylan Thuris, wishing you all the wonder in the world. I'll see you next time.
Witness Docs from Stitcher.
The world isn't wide enough for those with an insatiable desire for discovery. The all-new 2024 Lincoln Nautilus Hybrid SUV offers the power and freedom to explore further and deeper than ever before. Intuitive, smart features ensure that you're always connected to the road ahead. Inside, a thoughtfully designed cabin immerses you in a universe that is all your own. The larger-than-life panoramic display spans the entire width of the cabin. It's customizable and interactive. Drivers can even personalize their backgrounds with a series of nature-inspired themes. This vehicle signals the arrival of an exciting new chapter for Lincoln. Discover more about the 2024 Lincoln Nautilus at Lincoln.com.
Hey, Keurig coffee drinkers. Did you know that the bold, smooth taste of Dunkin' cold coffee can be brewed in your Keurig coffee maker and enjoyed at home? Dunkin's cold K-Cup pods were crafted to be brewed hot and enjoyed cold. And of course, They're packed with the Dunkin' flavor you crave. Brew over ice and sip in seconds. Because the home with Dunkin' is where you want to be.